Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Quiet Earth Radio on Blog Talk Radio. This is Wilco here. Tonight we're going to talk about a show called The Survivors that debuted on BBC in 1975 and ran for three seasons to 1977. It's probably one of the best post-apocalyptic movies or actually series or any type of show for that matter. That's out there, and so we're going to discuss a good bit about the show tonight, and also some plans by the BBC to renew it. Actually, they're going to do a remake of the Survivor series. Let me go ahead and bring on my co-host here, Quiet Earth, just a moment here. Quiet Earth, how you doing tonight?
Hello.
Yeah, Quiet Earth, you doing okay tonight?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. How you doing?
I'm doing great. So we're going to talk about Survivors tonight. You got any particular favorite episodes or anything that you liked best about the series?
Well, I have to agree with what you said about it being the best post-apocalyptic TV series there is, hands down. It was thoroughly the most realistic, and it really pulled no punches. It wasn't, a happy Hollywood ending. It wasn't a happy-go-lucky show where, everybody holds hands and sing kumbaya. I mean, they had complete disasters and everything. It was great. It was realistic and actually told, a story. I mean, this is back before the time before, the flashy Hollywood, imagery you've seen in movies today where they show 5 seconds of a scene and cut to something else. It's actually so long, drawn-out scenes where they actually told an entire story. It was great.
Yeah, it is pretty great. I've never known anything about the series. I never even knew it even existed up until, earlier this year. And, after doing a little bit, getting ready to, thinking about doing the show here back in July and going through a lot of the post-apocalyptic shows and movies, doing a little bit of research there, I realized this kept coming up, if we do a Google of, post-apocalyptic movies or see a list on several different websites or even on your website at quietearth.us, there's always that mention of this series. And I think we talked about it here a few times. And then this is pretty hard. I'll tell folks, it's not easy to get the copies of this. I try to get – you can find the versions at Amazon and I believe on eBay – but most of them are, obviously for European, the different regions. So they don't really make a DVD copy that, you play per se, on U.S. DVD players. But, there are other ways of getting copies of the show. And, if you can get a hold of this or, the first, second seasons, I definitely would, recommend you watch it. Even though it's 30 years old, like I said, it was May 1975. It still holds up, the story and all the stories in it. And, like I said, I think that's the main thing about what we like about it, as you were just saying, is that it has a real story. And I think it still holds up even till today.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. I mean, it's definitely timeless. It's one of those things people are going to watch, 30 years from now, and they're still going to love it. That's why they call it a cult hit.
When was the first time you'd ever heard of this, or when did you first see this?
I don't remember exactly. I think it was about a year and a half ago when I was really getting Quiet Earth going. I was going through, other people's lists of stuff, and I found it. And I was like, what's this? And It was quite a while before I checked it out. I mean, you know, TV, I really want to see movies, but, you know, it's good.
So what was your first impressions? You thought it was a pretty decent series for even as old as it is?
Well, first impression with that first episode was, okay, when's it going to start?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had Jericho, which was bang right from the beginning, and then it just went downhill into drama. This picked up within the first two or three episodes and really kind of didn't let us know what was going on. So it really takes about two or three episodes to get into, but it's worth it.
Yeah, I agree. It takes a couple episodes really because the first episode, and we'll just talk about it, the first episode's called Season 1, The Fourth Horseman. And what you see there is basically the outbreak. You're kind of getting indications a little bit on some people listen to the radios and people talking to each other about people getting sick. And, you know, there's one of the main characters whose name is Peggy. She's a young single Londoner, and she stops at the hospital there. And you start seeing long, long lines of people trying to get vaccinations, which she finds out later that was just the government, you know, giving away vaccines. They actually had no cure for the virus. And actually, let me back up a little bit, because let's tell people what happens at the very beginning of each one of these episodes. The very beginning is supposedly you have an Oriental, an Asian biological scientist appears to be working. And I think I've read that it may have been a government, this might be one of those weapons, biological weapons facilities. But anyhow, really, I can't remember if it really tells you that for sure. But what you see is an Asian man who drops a flask. When that flask drops, and apparently he becomes the carrier of this virus. And then it shows him traveling on an airplane from, Rome to Moscow to all these big cities. And apparently that's how it begins. And And from what we understand, I guess it's like 99% of the people of the population is killed. Is that right? Isn't that right?
Well, I always got the feeling it was like more like 99.99% of the population is wiped out. And, another thing is, with that ambiguous, little story at the beginning of each episode, I've always wondered whether he spread the virus on purpose or, I've always gotten that feeling.
Yeah, I hear you. Because you would think that if he was carrying he would have known how bad or serious this virus was. Why was he traveling around like he was? You know, that does kind of bring up some questions there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But then in the first episode from there, that kind of gives you an idea of what's happening. This is basically, like I said again, the virus is something they're working on. There's an accident in a lab. It gets out, and this fella, again, is traveling around, and he's a carrier, and then everybody, it spreads that way. And it's pretty much, it happens very fast. As soon as you're affected, people die within, I guess, a couple of days. So it's not like a long, drawn-out thing. Everybody catches it, and it all happens pretty quick. But that's how the first episode begins. You kind of get this idea of everybody getting sick, and then these folks realizing that things are. I thought what was interesting in the first episode was they show the train scene, and she asked the guy. She says, well, "When's next or something train about the schedule?" And the guy says, "Everybody's sick. Everything's going to pots." And when you're watching it, you're watching the civilization, everything's started. When you start seeing the trains and everything, everything's going to pots. I mean, it's just a breakdown of civilization. And eventually that's what happens is, it is. I mean, there is no more machines, no more trains, no more, it's scavenging and everything from there.
Yeah, so, the scavenging does not last long either. I mean, it moves swiftly into, okay, we need to rebuild civilization from the ground up with a handful of people, that are available. And, you get to see all the types of problems they run into, medical issues. Luckily, they find a doctor, but how long is that doctor going to be around? What if something happens to that doctor? And that doctor spreads thin.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, I was just thinking, though, can you imagine, they kind of cover a little bit, can you imagine that many people dying at one time? Like, what would the smell be like, you know?
Well, I guess that's why they move out to the country.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that would force you literally, yeah. You know, that would be, gosh, man. I mean, you know, I mean, for, luckily, the people who do survive, now let's talk about the survivors. They're somehow, I can't remember if there's actual, they tell you, I can't remember if there's actual, they tell you why they didn't become ill, but they just had, they were immune to it. And they were just the lucky ones. That's all. There was no magic potion or anything. The few people that did live were just immune to it. And it's just them, you know, towards the end of the first episode, and then that really takes you right into the next 2, 3, 4, and 5 episodes where then you got these few people that, you know, that you see, and there's nobody on the streets except for these people. There's one scene where there's kind of this hobo guy who's like a homeless man who's going around, you know, and he's like checking out the, I guess, the Rolls Royces and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, all the expensive jewelry, like it matters now.
Yeah. But it was pretty, you know, as far as the way they filmed a lot of those scenes, it definitely gave the impression of, you know, kind of like a dead world, dead, real silent, you know, feel to it.
Yeah.
I tell you, there was a couple of interesting characters in it. I guess, you know, the main characters was Greg and Peggy. We also have, just kind of give people an idea of the story. Now, one of the main characters' name is Abby, and you see her really pretty much in the first season. And her whole mission, really, other than meeting up with other survivors and starting all over, is she's out, you know, running around looking for her son. And,
yeah, which, you know, everybody tries to convince her is really not a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? I don't think in, I'm just finishing up on season 3, but, you know, it's funny how that's one thing about the series, though. It's good. The first season, let me let people know, to get the first season was directed by a man named Terry Nation. Now, I don't think Terry, I think he did the first season, and then he didn't do the second or third. Isn't that right?
I am not sure. I'm actually looking that up right now.
Yeah, I believe it was just Terry Nation. He does the first season, and it's kind of the first season, second season, third season are all a little bit different, too. The first season is, you've got a group of the people, you know, you see what happens after the, you know, civilization dies and the few people trying to find each other. And then they're trying to basically, you know, they're running around basically trying to find a place that's safe. And in the first season, that's what they do. They eventually find a castle, and that's kind of where they, you know, the story towards the, I'd say, the second part of first season, you know, concentrates on. And, but again, you know, we have Jericho out right now, but as you said, probably as far as a post-apocalyptic show goes, I mean, this goes in a lot more detail, doesn't it, Glutter?
Well, yeah, I would say it kind of does, but it concentrates on the more human aspect, whereas this concentrates on both the human aspect and, you know, the logistics of living after this situation. And that's kind of brushed out in Jericho, at least so far.
Yeah, I don't think as far as Jericho goes, you got a limited situation when you think about Jericho. I mean, it's an interesting story, you know, with the terrorist, and I mean, it's just a different story. But in Survivors, it's kind of an interesting, you know, way they, because the survivors, they literally, in Jericho they touch upon it a little bit, but not, because there's a lot more, you know, other kind of, I don't know how to say this, fancy drama, I guess, I don't know, that's not the good word, the best word to come up with, but in Survivors, I suppose it's, to me it's a little bit more pure, and I mean, you know, they concentrate so much on survival itself. I mean, they know they've got to find cattle, livestock, you know, they start trying to grow things. They fail at some things. They learn, and you see that play out in the show. And I thought that was kind of some of the most interesting things.
Well, here's he actually was a writer for 7 episodes of Survivors, and it doesn't say he was the creator, but it also does say he kind of worked on MacGyver a little.
Isn't that weird?
Well, like, isn't that good? That's kind of MacGyver, huh? Well,
yeah,
that's pretty cool. Well, I don't know. It's, you know, there's a lot of, I guess, how would you say, a lot of survival-type skills in MacGyver, and you find that in Survivor. That's kind of interesting, though. But Survivors, it does show a lot of, you know, there's one episode in there, I guess my favorite was called Law and Order. And then in that episode, they had to deal with the hobo, the homeless man whose character, whose name was Tom Price. And they had a party one night. They also, now, by this time, they're in the castle. And they've taken along a kind of like a the village idiot kind of, you know, young man who's, you know, semi, I guess I would say semi-retarded, but, you know.
He's a nice guy. He's a nice guy, though.
Yeah, but this episode really gets to the heart of how things, you know, how interesting the show was. They threw a party, and there's a murder that happens. Well, the person they believe that committed the murder was the, you know, the retarded young man who, you know, in a lot of ways couldn't defend himself. And obviously, he is. They have a terrible dilemma, you know, trying to because they all have to vote whether or not to, you know, convict him and then, you know, kill him. You know, basically, you know, capital punishment is what they're dealing with, and you know, they're it's pretty hard to, you know, have to do. And not only, you know, to have to, you know, convict. I mean to. To, you know, vote on it for capital punishment, but also, like I said, this young man is, you know, he's semi-mentally retarded. So it just kind of goes back with that dilemma, and then at the end, they convict him, and then they carry out the sentence, and then you find out they killed the wrong person. Do you remember that episode?
Oh, I remember that loud and clear. That was probably one of the most, I wouldn't say sorry episodes, but the one of the most tearful. It was really, really sad.
Yeah, especially when you realize at the end. Well, you knew all along that he was not the one, but they didn't know it, and it just. But it just was, you know that was, and then to see the character named Greg. I mean, he just says, you know, he doesn't want to do it. It's where to watch him walk with this man out in the woods. And then you hear a gunshot, and then he comes back, and he's the one who has to carry it out. And
that's one of those episodes where you feel like you could reach it. You wish you could reach it and scream and, you know, strangle someone with your bare hands. You know, you're like, oh no, don't do it. You know, it's just
yeah, and then at the end, you find the real guy who did do it. You know, who was the, you know. Kind of Tom Price, he's a homeless guy. In some ways, you know, I hated that. That was a tough episode. I mean, that was a pretty well-written episode. Because in a lot of ways, Tom Price, you kind of felt sorry for him. I did, at least in the first couple episodes. And he kind of grew on you a little bit. He was kind of a funny kind of guy. And, you know, you didn't ever think that he would ever commit murder. But, you know, he does in an episode. And, then you're stuck yourself thinking, you know, man, you know, why do you do it, you know, and this kind of stuff. But, yeah, that's just a little glimpse of Survivors. There's a lot of different stories in there, and a lot of it concentrates also on a lot of the what's going on everywhere else. And really what's going on everywhere else is you just have bands of people that have, you know, just kind of grouped up, and then you have a lot of marauding people running around stealing, doing, you know, whatever. And, you know, they have to deal with that. So,
yeah, you have all sorts of different ideological and theological little communes. And, you know, then you got one guy that early on in series one who had, like, what, 4 or 6 wives. It was like, man, that could be me.
Well, that, you know, it could be. You know, that was, you start up your own little kingdom in a world like Survivors. That's
Well, it'll be like Waco. Then they'll come firebomb me.
Well, you know, they're running a couple. You know, in the second season, then you have Charles, which is kind of, you run into him in the first season for one episode, And he's one of these guys who's kind of started one of these. Now, what he believes in is everything's got to be relearned and, everything thought out differently, everything to be done differently as far as, growing crops and surviving. Now, his whole aspect is, he has kind of a commune going, and he has, mostly women, and he's, the only guy, So there's all kind of different little, setups going on.
Yeah. Very, very, very different setups going on. Some people normal, some people, they're just taking advantage of the situation.
And they do, they started in season two, they do go back to England or London. They have to because I think one of the doctors is kidnapped and they have to go back, to go find her. And that's a pretty neat little episode. And they kind of show at the beginning them going through the streets of London and all the cars, parked in every which way and everything, it kind of looks like, just been deserted. And what do they find? They find millions of rats. That was one of the things they found.
Yeah, they really couldn't go outside because the rat problem was so bad.
Yeah.
That they would just get eaten alive.
Yeah, I would imagine that would. Well, another thing was you had to watch out for were the dogs.
Yeah, the wild dogs.
Packs of dogs, running around and banding together. And I bet you we don't even have to worry about, surviving, not being killed by other people, but packs of dogs and millions of rats, that's a lot to deal with,
Yeah, definitely. And really, all those different systems and the whole thing put together, imagine the vastness of space between people, And I'm not talking of like some metaphysical aspect. I'm talking in an actual physical aspect, Say we're here in the U.S. and that goes down, when's the next time you get to see a person,
Yeah, well, it's, if that many people were killed off, it'd be kind of a weird, I guess you'd kind of, I think when I think of something like that, I think of was it the movie with Tom Hanks on the, he was on the island by himself, that movie that was just recently, a couple of years ago.
Oh, that was a few years ago. Yeah, the one where he was on the FedEx plane.
Yeah.
And it's like he's stranded or something like that.
Yeah, and he starts talking to the soccer ball.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm saying. That's probably what you'd end up starting to do after a while, is that what you're saying? You think that if that were to happen, or are you trying to say something similar like that? You're saying that you probably it would take a long time to find someone else.
Well, it might not. It depends. We're really going based on no count from the show. Just I would say it pretty much wipes everybody off the face of the planet based on what we see in the TV series. I'm thinking out here where I live in Colorado, and when's the next time I'm going to see a person? Because there's so much space.
Okay.
Whether they be driving down the street and I'm going to flag them down,
Well, that's a good point. You're right. I guess if you think of, especially a lot of rural areas, you're right, it probably would be just dead space. Probably your larger cities would probably have a large amount of some people there, but you're right. You probably would drive from Colorado to Memphis and maybe not run into nobody.
Yeah, it's quite possible. Either that or people would be too afraid to show themselves, how many times have we seen all these topics explored in post-apocalyptic movies, but especially, post-apocalyptic literature?
Yeah.
What happens? People go crazy. They hide. They kill themselves. They go nuts,
Yeah, well, that's kind of the way I look at it. After some kind of event like this, I would think that there would probably be this kind of reconciling after that the next couple of years. What I mean by that is, people not trusting anybody, a lot of, people survived the whatever that happened, the survivors of that, but then surviving, you know, the you know, the survivors, you know, I'm trying to say, people, you know, weary of other people not trusting each other, and then, you know, eventually what would happen is I would think that eventually you'd start, you know, banding with other people, that, you know, that's how it would, you know, begin again. But that period from the time the apocalypse happens, from that time people start banding, I would think that those probably take a couple of years before, you know, people, you know, really started, you know, getting in groups again.
Yeah. Well, what I guess we should talk about, one of the main reasons we're doing this show is there's actually a remake planned. Now, me and, you know, you and everybody else, we're always wary of remakes, because how often are remakes good? Almost never. Usually they're terrible, right? They're profitable for, you know, the people that make them, because, you know, people take the name, they associate it, and they go and pay money and they watch it. But we'll see. You know, the DBC has actually purchased the rights or acquired the rights from the Terry Nation Estate to do a remake, and all we know right now is that basically the show is going to be about day-to-day survival after the apocalypse. They don't even tell us if they're going to use the same biological premise or anything else, but that's just it, basically.
Well, I think it's still, I think it'd be awesome. I think you're going to kind of modernize it, is what you're trying to say. Give it, you know, a modern look, but, you know, stay true to the storyline, is from what I'm hearing, which is, you know, that's cool. I mean, what I think is great about it is at least people with the remake, hopefully this will be on BBC America, so, you know, American audiences can see it. Like we said earlier, you know, this is pretty hard. I don't think too many people have been able to see this series. So it's a good thing to, you know, come out on the show like tonight, talk about something that a lot of people probably haven't even heard of. And, again, if, you know, if you ever get a chance to get a copy of this, like I said, it was made in 1975 from the BBC, you definitely want to check it out, because, like I said, it's a great series, it's a great show. It's a lot of good, I mean, it's just good writing, just good, you know, good storylines. But like I said, it takes the post-apocalyptic genre, it takes a more serious look at it than your normal, say, pop drama, you know, movie format you normally see.
Exactly, and you know, I have to say, even though I'm wary, just like any other remake, I'm going to watch it. But, you know, I'm wondering if they're going to have the same bell bottoms in the remake, or if they're going to put, like, a more modern look into it.
Hard to say. I don't know. When I think of modern, I think I'm just thinking of just, I don't know. You know, I think just, you know, kind of, well, they're talking about, what I'm thinking they're talking about is just updating the look of it, you know.
Greg's got sagging pants, his hat in the back, and he's listening to his iPod.
Well, you got a good point, you know, that's right. That's probably what they're, yeah, because it's definitely, yeah, bell bottoms and blue jeans in the old series. But, hey, I love it. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know. I mean, hopefully we'll have some more information soon. I mean, whenever we get it, we will put it up, folks, on www.quietearth.us and let you all know we are going to follow this closely, just like we do Jericho. And in fact, we're about to do it for Jericho. We've been due like 3 months. What the heck is it?
Jericho's probably going to be coming out some about midway January.
They're taking their sweet time.
Yeah, you would have thought maybe, I'd have thought maybe they'd tried to bring it out with the, since the writers have gone on strike and they haven't been able to, you know, write any new series for the, you know, the shows they have right now, because they're going into reruns with them. But I guess they're going to stick with their original plan. Now, that's what they've been planning on doing is, you know, making it a second part of this, yeah, from January to June. So, and if it, you know, picks up, then we might be looking at season 3. I don't know. It's kind of tough because, boy, I tell you, I mean, you're right. I mean, now we're going on what, almost, it'll be a year, you know?
Yeah, it's been way too long. It's been sitting too long.
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of seems kind of long time to be bringing up, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to work out. We'll just have to see it. I hope they wrote a pretty good, because they've already got the episodes in the can. I think it's 9 episodes, and they're already finished. So
yeah, and you know, we get the press releases from CBS, and you know, the first season and the second half of the first season, CBS sent me you know, they sent screeners of the episodes so I could do reviews before the show's aired. Hopefully they're going to do that this time. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Okay. And also, I wanted to mention real quick, though, about, you know, like I said, I'm all hyped up, stoked about Iron Legend. I know that we talked about this last week, and you guys are kind of like, oh, the trailer, man, it's just the trailer. But I hope it's going to be more than that. But I think that'll be a lot of fun to hit out in the theaters to check that out. And that's going to be a good it sure looks pretty decent, you know, but it's probably the biggest thing, post-apocalyptic show, that movie that's coming out here lately. And, you know, it does go along what, you know, what this show is all about. So I think that's coming out on December 14th, just in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, and actually I read a rumor on the net that it might be rated PG-13, and they changed the ending.
To change the ending.
Yeah, which makes me think, oh, this is going to be worse than I thought. Yeah.
Oh.
They're probably going to have a happy ending. They're, you know, this is a post-apocalyptic movie. You cannot make a post-apocalyptic movie that is not rated R. In fact, I could think of PA movies that are rated X, like Glenn and Randa, you know. PG-13 is unthinkable.
Well, I don't know. I don't know, Quiet Earth. I don't know. I hear what you're saying. I guess, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I guess we all have different, yeah, I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see what we got here, you know. You know, if it's got a decent storyline, at least, you know, the look of the film looks pretty awesome, you know. I guess I'm looking at that a little too hard. I guess I have to wait till we see the actual movie. But I guess you're right. It does kind of raise your eyebrows when if they had to redo the ending, that means you're right. It probably... they have screened this movie and something they didn't like at the end.
Well, I didn't say redo. I mean, I said that they changed the ending, meaning from what I understand from the book.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Well, yeah, and you know, if I want to watch Finding Nemo, I could go write a Disney movie. This is not from a Disney book. This is from one of the best books of all time. This is from classic literature. I mean, this is the fourth
Hold on for you. You know, this book, they did make a movie with Vincent Price in the 60s called The Last Man. Now, that wasn't a rated R pick, you know. And it
Last Man on Earth. That was classy, and it was Vincent Price.
But I'm just trying to say that it doesn't necessarily have to be R, you know. I know where you're coming from, but I'm trying to say it doesn't necessarily have to be an R rating, you know. It doesn't have to be 28 days later, actually, to be success. So we'll just have to see. But I understand where you're coming from. I mean, you're a major zombie guy, you know. So, I mean, you know, seeing a zombie put his hands through somebody's abdomen and pulling out, you know, somebody's trunk, you know.
Well, they're gonna CGI out all the guns and put flowers in people's hands.
All right, I just said.
Yeah, flower power. It's destroying the movie, man.
I just had to put the. I hear you. Well, we'll see. Like I said, it's got a lot of hype to it, though, and it'll be coming out a couple weeks. And also, I know you had spotlighted that movie, The Mist, by Stephen King. Have you heard anything about it? Is it does it sound like it's been a hit or anything? Have you heard?
Well, of course, on some of the major sites, I've seen that there was good reviews of it, which means nothing to me. I mean, that makes me wary. And you know, from what I understand, they changed the ending. I haven't seen it yet. They changed the ending, and it's. People are not too happy with it. I'm a big early Stephen King fan. The Mist is one of my favorite short stories by him. And, you know, I'm really wary again. Also, Darabont, who directed The Mist, is supposedly going to be doing The Long Walk next, which is another of my favorite Stephen King stories. And, you know, at this point, you know, I'm about to write an article saying, please, you know, somebody pull the long walk from Darabont. No, you know, no more butchering Stephen King's stories.
Yeah, they definitely churn them out. I hear you. Well, that's kind of interesting. You know, I did read something, though. Stephen King said he was kind of satisfied, though, with this guy who did, because the guy who wrote the screenplay, I believe, for The Mist was the guy that did the screenplay for The Shawshank Redemption, so, and The Green Mile.
Okay, well, I mean, admittedly, Stephen King, you know, great author, you know, but there are many things we could say about him now, about, you know, his work recently, and there's other things that would make us suspect his opinion of this movie might be compromised. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying. There's a lot of, you're right. Looks like, you know, Stephen King, his books, though, I mean, as good as they are, they're hard to, I would say they're kind of, well, I won't say hard to adapt, but you're right, though. Most of the movies that they have tried to adapt from the book didn't really turn out, you know, what the book was really, you know what I'm saying, that was really about, so.
Yeah, like The Running Man? What was that?
Yeah.
That's like him putting the title on a script, you know?
Well,
that's my biggest fear, is they're going to try to do The Running Man for real, like based on the book, because that's like my favorite story of his. You know, and I don't think logistically you could do that,
yeah.
You know?
Well, let me
the only good adaptation from a Stephen King story was Shawshank Redemption. The only one.
Yeah, actually, that was a really good movie. But any independent short, independent movies, anything out there that we should be looking out for?
Oh, geez. Day X came out on DVD last Tuesday. It's a great post-apocalyptic zombie film. It's low budget, but it gets over that in about 10 minutes. I wrote a review of it. I loved it.
What's it called?
Day X.
Day X, okay. All right. And that's
on DVD? Yep, that's on DVD since last Tuesday. This Tuesday, coming out on DVD, it's a movie called Dark Mind. It's starring Christopher Masterson, who plays Francis on Malcolm in the Middle. It's a movie set against the backdrop of the McCarthy era, and Christopher plays this character Paul, who is an inventor from a young age, and you know he just goes mad from the beginning of the film, mad and paranoid, and it's like a mystery, and it's got sci-fi stuff. It's beautiful. I've got a review up on the site. It comes out this Tuesday on DVD. We got The Men Who Fell. That's being released. That post-apocalyptic movie is being released in Japan before anybody else gets it. It's going to be called Biohazard X. It's actually going to be released in English, and it's coming out December 21st. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've seen that trailer a couple times. That looks pretty neat.
Yeah, it looks awesome. And, you know, I just recently heard that it was a low-budget movie, but from looking at the trailer, you wouldn't be able to tell that it is a low-budget movie.
Yeah. Well, if it's now that's the one where the guys kind of, I don't know if they crash land or they land in kind of like a desert type planet.
Actually, they're in space. They're in space, and there's these prisoners on like a space station or something, and they get sent to the Earth, which has been devastated, to get something, and that's the premise for the film.
Okay, yeah, it's the same one I'm thinking about. No, you're right. It does seem like what I did a little bit of reading on that. That company is out of Arizona, and if you look at some of the, at least as far as the trailer, some of the shots, though, they use some of the industrial places around there. But those shots look pretty amazing. Let's put it that way. They look pretty cool. You know,
it looks like it has very high production value.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, and then we got Automatons, which I just found out about recently. And this is actually about, like, the last girl alive, a bunch of robots. And, like, she's got her own robots, and she's battling these intelligent robots, and they're, like, battling for Earth or something. It's basically a really cool-looking movie. She's the only human being left. All she's got are these videotapes of, like, her mentors and these scientists, and one of them is actually Angus Scrimm, you know, the tall man from Phantasm.
Yeah.
It looks great. It's going to be hitting DVD on January 29th. The tagline is, "This is how humanity dies." I will be getting a screener of this, within a month and a half or so. And we got that, which looks good. And that's about pretty much all that's new. I mean, there's a few other things, but that's the most recent stuff.
That's cool. Okay, a lot of that information, you can also go to Quiet Earth website at www.quietearth.us. You know, I saw Memoirs of a Survivor the other night, and I'm trying to watch as many a few of the post-apocalyptic movies that I haven't seen yet, and I have to give that one a thumbs down, man. I don't know if you have you seen that.
No, I have not seen. Wait, Memoirs of a Survivor, was that like where society has fallen down, and then there's this woman going through the wall?
Yes.
And she's got like this young girl that comes to stay with her, and
yes.
Then she gets with this guy with all the orphans.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I give that a thumbs down too. It made no sense whatsoever.
Yes, I don't know. The little bit I read about it, it was based upon this book. That was pretty good, but that was definitely a movie that should have been left a book. I can't believe I even lasted through the whole movie, but I did. And it was pretty interesting. You know, background, cinematography there looks kind of neat. Other than that, the story and the rest of it, thumbs down.
Yeah, and at least you're confused, not in like an intellectually curious way, more in confused like this movie sucks way.
Well, it was I agree. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. And I wanted to announce. I'm in talks right now with Mr. Brent Friedman, who does this web show called Afterworld, and I need to get in touch with him this week. I did receive an email from him, and we're trying to get him on the show. We might be able to schedule him on here for next Sunday, so you might want to look out for that, folks. He's got a post-apocalyptic, it's kind of like, I don't know if it's a cartoon or comic cartoon, you could say. I don't know, how would you describe it, Quiet Earth?
I would say animation, but it's not color. It's like CGI, but without all the effects. It's more stationary.
Yeah.
Kind of like animation CGI puppets. I don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty unique. And he's got a website there, and he updates it pretty often, actually. He's really into it, and it's about this fellow who survives the apocalypse and really – kind of a mystery what happened, but it's an interesting little story. And he takes a trip from New York. He's trying to make his way back home to L.A. And right now, I think the story is midway in Mid America. But we're going to try to have him on next week and describe a little bit about that website called Afterworld. Well, I think I wanted to close again. We talked about survivors here at the beginning of the show, and I want to say that, again, the show, even though it was made in 1975, we highlighted, we talked about it, we mentioned it before while we've been doing these shows, and tonight we kind of, spotlighted it, and we did that for a good reason because it's a really good show. It really takes it serious, how people would survive in a post-apocalyptic world and how they would band together and what they would probably do, and it takes a lot of different issues, and it puts it in a really good drama. And again, the BBC just picked this up again. They just bought the rights for this show just here very recently, just in the past month. And they're going to renew this and make a new Survivor series. Hopefully that'll be out here on BBC America. All right, well, that should do it for me. Okay, Choir, did you anything you want to end on?
I just want to thank everybody for tuning in and say that, yeah, post-apocalyptic movies rule, and so do zombies.
And so zombies. Okay, folks, you have a good week, and we'll see you next Sunday for another great show of Quiet Earth Radio. Good night.
Night, folks.
a place called Lee Ho Fook. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein. Kitchen door. You better not let him in. Little old lady got mutilated late last night. Werewolves of London again. Gent who ran amok in Kent. Lately he's been overheard in Mayfair. You better stay away from him. He'll rip your lungs out, Jim. I'd like to meet his tailor. Lon Chaney walking with the Queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw Lon Chaney Jr. walking with the Queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw a werewolf drinking a pina colada at Trader Vic's, and his hair was perfect.
Saw me go, I was